Welcome to the Tile Stand podcast number 351. We're back a little bit earlier this week, actually, because we're back in the groove now. Obviously, we haven't had a game, or we haven't got a game to talk about today, but we have got two gentlemen alongside me today. As always, Mr. Ross County, Ross Igualia, Ross on Y.
Nice.
Ross Chester. That's not a place, is it?
That kind of works. The name that some people at work will call me occasionally is Rhinoceros. So if you, you know, if you're looking for one of those there, that's a good one. But yeah, good to be back as per usual. And yeah, if the podcast ain't coming out on time, it's probably something to do with the speed at which I'm editing. So sorry about that one, guys. But at least you get a couple back to back pretty soon, you know.
And making his podcast debut, we've got Ryan. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thank you guys for having me on. Proud to be making my debut. This is my podcasting debut as well. It's the first ever podcast I'm kind of experiencing, and looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting stuck into things.
You guys can't see this, obviously, because you listen to us, but Ryan's got a 1999-2000 shirt on.
Yeah, 1999-2000 was actually before I was born. but I've got a fairly decent collection of home shirts. I think my oldest one's 92. And in the background, I've got a nice little match-worn Hahnemann shirt from 06-07, which is quite nice.
Maybe we could do that one day. Maybe we should just do a pod on shirts, because we always talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, this is how we got Ryan in. We're just talking about shirts, and there's, oh, you're a Reading fan too. Great. Well, that works out.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all shirt enthusiasts too.
Yeah.
He likes fabric and he likes football shirts. Excellent stuff. As always, thank you very much to our sponsors, ZCZ Films. We're just talking off air about what we're going to do with it. Looking at a range of things, but it's not just the pods, obviously, they help us with a lot of the articles, and there's some great stuff out at the moment. So do check that out. We haven't got a recap as such. Obviously, it's been the international weekend, boo-hoo. But we are going to talk about the season so far. Myself and Ross touched on it a little bit last week, but we're kind of going to do a bit more of a deep dive on it. So we'll get right into that after this short message.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, we have played, I wrote it down, but I can't remember. We played some games, right? We played some games. And, you know, the kind of the general form has been indifferent to not great across those games. We're not going to go through them one by one, because there's ones that we instantly want to forget. most notably the last game against Cambridge away. But we are going to talk about kind of some of the positives out of that, and maybe things that we really need to work on moving forward. Ryan, I'm going to start with you out of the batch of games that we've had. There's been some all right performances, you know, not groundbreaking, but considering where we were in the summer and, you know, how the team's been very late in being put together. What for you has been the standout performance so far with this squad that we've got?
It would be very easy of me to say that sort of the Millwall Cup game would be my highlight, but the fact I wasn't there, I kind of tend towards the games that I've seen in person. So for me personally, actually, the Stevenage game was my favourite, mostly because of how dominant I felt we were throughout the game. Unlike the Cheltenham game, we actually scored ourselves. We didn't have to rely on our own goal, which was good. But it was just nice to actually be enjoying football again. I felt the last year under he who shall not be named, the manager, was very dull and very dour. However, the Stevenage game, I was back to enjoying my football again. Obviously, I'm very unlucky Calvin Eden score a hat-trick, and it was kind of the first time that you can see the direction that Sellers wanted to take the team. And being the fact that Stevenage were in the top two at the time, it was kind of a bit more of a result than the Cheltenham game. Obviously, I know they went down to 10 men, and there's a lot of game state to be had. There were, obviously, as soon as they got out, it was very early on, the red card. And they did have a few chances early on, but from then, we were, I thought, very dominant in our performance, and it looked very sound. And to be honest, I'm very surprised to see Stevenage still top. No disrespect to them, but I didn't really see much in the performance that I would value them as a side towards the top half. So I guess you could say that was down to Reading's performance potentially, but at the same time, it's kind of the situation that they found themselves in, obviously playing 11 versus 10 for the majority of the game. But there were some really good standout performances from Bindon in there, Kelvin E, obviously, and Mbengue, probably his best game in a Reading shirt, which I think you guys touched on last week as well. But yeah, for me, Stevenage. But obviously, if you're saying as a picture as a whole, what I was most impressed as a fan, obviously going away to Millwall, winning 4-0 with the kids against a strong Championship team.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of Stevenage game was, you know, the last time we picked up any points. I say last time, but it's only, what, you know, less than a month ago. That obviously was off the back of the 1-0 winning against Cheltenham, which personally I was pretty impressed with. But, you know, that kind of bracket of games, minus the Port Vale one, which you could argue was one of the worst games we've had this season, was looking really positive for a period of time. You know, we kind of talked about it up and down, but the league is very, very open this season, probably a lot more open than most people thought it would be. Ross, in terms of your kind of standout performance, what would you say for you has kind of really stuck in the memory so far this season?
I'm going to build a little bit on what Ryan was saying, because I do agree that the Stevenage game was probably the best performance. But I think overall, what Ryan was saying about enjoying the football again is very true. And with Sellers' style, you can see them actually trying to do something somewhat interesting in an attacking sense. The ball goes forward very quickly, which is always exciting to watch. But even more importantly, thing I've probably been most happy with so far is that the defense has been pretty solid. We've got the least goals conceded of any team in the bottom half of the table at the moment. We haven't scored too many goals. We've only scored 4 goals so far, but I think you can see how that's improving. You can see how the players up front are gelling. And we talked last week about how there's lots of players in the attack and the midfield who are vying for spots. And if players aren't scoring, if players aren't creating, then there are players right on their shoulder to, you know, take their spot. So that still seems to me like something that'll sort itself out a bit, although there is some worry because obviously Sellers' team at Southampton wasn't the most free scoring. But it's nice to see the defense tightening up, and we've played a few different defenses so far this season. I would say almost like the first 2 games of the season are almost like a different team. And since then it's kind of been the season starting again. But we've changed out the defenders a bunch, and yet we've kept pretty solid throughout, and that's with some defenders in the team who are not the best defenders anyway. So I think that's impressive, and it shows that the game plan is limiting chances, which is good.
I mean, you know, you touched upon it there in terms of defensive capabilities, if you like. That's a good word, isn't it? Capabilities. I like that. It's good. It's all right.
Big word from
under. Words on this pod. We love shirts. We love words. So yeah, welcome, Ryan. Welcome to our. I think, you know, the key thing for me in the games that I've seen is the resilience. And actually, you're talking about losses. And of course, you know, going to be like, hold on, Ben, we didn't win the game. And that stands with our points tally at the moment. But, you know, the games we've lost late on and we've lost by 1 goal. And that, for me, you know, apart from Port Vale, that for me really is kind of quite a positive element, where you're looking at a young team, you're looking at that dreaded word inexperience in a lot of respects. And also the kind of the chaos off the pitch, which we'll come back to later on in this pod. There are some real positives there. That being said, you know, I think generally the expectations of where some fans want to be, from where other fans want to be, from where the club wants to be, is kind of a little bit muddied at the moment. I think, you know, we kind of said at the start of the season that we wouldn't really need to properly analyse things and really get panicky or overexcited until sort of late September, early October. And for me, after this block now, which has kind of been a bit of a blessing in disguise, really, I think we'll see the international break. You know, the kind of the season starts now, really. You know, we've got 5 points on the board. We're 20th in the league. It's not where anyone wants to be. We don't want to be in this league, but ultimately we are. And so now it's about getting the best team we can on the field week in, week out, and supplementing that with a really good squad. I mean, in terms of the squad, Ryan, you know, we've had some all right players come through the door. I don't think we've seen their full potential yet. But from your point of view, what would you say has been the standout, you know, bloke in the team? Who have you been most impressed with so far of this first block of games?
In terms of signings-wise, I would have obviously said Sam Smith if he was fit and available, because I think he would. I think he's part of the thing that we're missing the most. But that's besides the point. In terms of who we've actually seen, in his one sort of kind of cameo performance against Cheltenham, I can't remember if he actually played against Stevenage, but Lewis Wing I was very, very happy with the signing of Lewis when he came through the door. And he is something that I felt we were missing last season in terms of that composure on the ball. And there was one particular moment where I think he played a through ball. I want to say it was through to Vickers. I just looked at it. I was like, finally, someone who can play a decent ball. It's what we've been missing, midfielders who can sort of pass a ball. Charlie Savage next to him has been excellent as well. And Ben Elliott and flashes as... There's moments where you see Ben Elliott, especially in his cameo against Stevenage, that you were just like, there's a player there, there's a player there. But for me, the most standout player wasn't actually a signing. And the one that I was most surprised about is Nelson Abbey. Nelson Abbey is a 20-year-old who's come in, he's captained the side on different occasions, or on most occasions now, and he looks assured. He looks comfortable. He doesn't look like a 20-year-old. He's quick, he's strong, he's a half-decent passer of the ball as well. And I go to football with my grandparents. One of the first things I said to them, I think it was half-time the Cheltenham game, it was like, first thing we need to do is secure him for a five-year contract and make sure we sell him for a decent amount of money. Because as much as we'd love to keep him forever, that I can see him going far as a left-footed centre-back. So for me, Nelson Abbey is my number one standout player so far.
And I want to build on that quickly, what Ryan said there with like signing him to a contract so that even if we don't get to keep him, we can sell him for some money. Because that's something Reading have been so poor at with the last group of front office before Mark Bowen, right? So we need to actually start maximizing the assets that we have and making sure that if we can't, you know, if we can't keep him, we can at least get some money from him. We talked about that with Charlie Savage, whereby he's got this four-year contract, but like, I think, you know, there are some of it, you know, you could see a world where it doesn't work out and he's on loan in, I don't know, Crew in next year, whatever. But you could also very easily see a world where Charlie Savage only ends up staying with us for two of those 4 years, because by the end of that second year, we are not able to keep a player of that quality anymore if we don't go up. So yeah, I think it's important to make sure that we get those long contracts so that we can actually start operating, you know, with some income and outcome.
Ross, I think I know who you're going to say, but I'm just going to ask you anyway. Standout player so far?
Don't ask me about Tyler Bindon again. No, I won't say Tyler Bindon. I'm going to say Nibs, because I haven't talked about Nibs really at all on this podcast yet. I know you've talked about him a bit, Ben, but Nibs is somebody that when we went to the first game, I went to the first game of my family. It was great. It was when I was back in the UK, and my wife wasn't super impressed with Nibs. That day we thought he was getting beat down the left a bunch, but shows what I know, because he's stayed in the team for the entire, he's been basically the constant in the team, Femi Aziz kind of as well, but Nibs has really nailed down that position on the left side of the second rung of midfield. And I think that he's just given, you know, we talked about players that give you like a five or six every game, and Nibs is coming closer to doing like a six or seven every game, right? I still don't think I've seen one performance from him that I'm like, oh yeah, that's the one right there. You know, oddly, I think his best game in a Reading shirt might have been against Southampton in preseason. But that said, I think there's a reason why he's getting to play so much. So good on him for coming into a new team and nailing down a position early on.
I think he's very similar. Sorry if I just add to this. I think he's very similar to sort of the Mason Mount role. A lot of the time you hear a lot of people, when Mount gets called up to England, they're sort of going, oh, why is Mason Mount in the team? Why are United spending so much money on him? What I feel like Nibs offers to the team is not necessarily attacking output, it's what he does off the ball. It's the pressing. He's very hardworking in what he does. And we were told that before we signed him, that he was going to be as hardworking. I think I saw a stat like he had one of the best defensive stats for an attacking player in League One last season. So fitting into Sellers' pressing model, we knew that that's what he's coming and done. And I think that's the reason why Sellers trust him so much, is because when he's playing that 4-3-2, when he's playing out wide on the left, he's a high presser here, get involved in the defensive side of the game. And the attacking contribution will come once he's more settled. But for now, he's definitely offering a lot off the ball that we may not appreciate as much. But I agree with you when you say he's a 5-6 out of 10 every week, and I think I'm happy with him so far.
And just kind of close out the recap, because I'm literally looking as we speak down the list of both, you know, what is classed as men in the team. A bit weird. Just to say first team, it just says men, and then under 21s as well. There's so many players that we haven't yet seen. You know, Makairu, we haven't seen Smith, obviously. We haven't seen Ballard. We haven't really seen much of Elliott, to be honest. Wing, as you mentioned, has been injured. Ajaria, we keep coming back to him. You know, it's there's a lot of players. You know, Guinness Walker, I guess, will now come back into the fold. In terms of those players that have kind of been on the fringes or injured or not yet featured for, you know, the men's first team, who are you most excited about?
It's for me, it's got to be Ovi Ajaria. For the periods when Ovi was at his Reading peak, if you will, as I classed it, sort of the 1920 season, 2021 season, he was just a joy to watch. He was what I enjoyed going to football to watch because he would just pull out an outrageous skill. And I saw Sellers mentioned in the week at the fans forum thing that started that he's potentially looking at using him as a six or an eight, which is very exciting to have a player, obviously, of that good on the ball, playing in the two deeper midfield roles. Slightly worrying if he does try and pull out a few step overs, you know, on the edge of our box. But I'm really excited to see him back in the team and hopefully with a bit of a fresher start, because we know I think it went a bit sour with Paul Ince at the end of his time. And I'm hoping the best of Ovi will come out, but I'm sure every Reading fan is. And obviously Paul Makariu as well. Is it Makariu? I'm not sure my pronunciation.
I think it is. That's what I've gone with anyway.
I'm excited to see him because obviously he's come from Copenhagen. I think he played against City in the Champions League last year as well. So there's obviously some pedigree there that Sellers has seen, and Sellers has obviously previously worked with him. So seeing him come into the fold, maybe a little bit more pace, directness, a bit more aggression. Looking forward to seeing him as well.
With Makariu, I will just point out that he did play 10 minutes against Exeter, and this is completely out of context. Like, I'm sure Makariu is going to be great or whatever, but I was doing the ratings that day, so I'll just give you what I wrote down for Paul Makariu. Not applicable was the rating, where it says, came on, lost the ball twice down the left flank, picked up a knock, got substituted. Amazing speed of appearance, blink and you'll miss him. So he did make an appearance for Reading, but it didn't go too well, and he found himself substituted after being substituted on 10 minutes later, unfortunately. But I'm sure
it's in the rules. You can't rate people for 10 minutes or less. I'm sure it's in the rules.
I said not. Yeah. I you know,
but yeah, you're right. I mean, he did have a bit of a stinker, and you could say the same for Mola, really. Mola, whatever. So, yeah, so there are a number of players that we've still yet to see. And I think, again, without constantly going on about this, there's so much potential with this team. And it really is a kind of bedding in period. And I honestly think now we're really going to see in the next, you know, block of games before the next international break, whenever that may be. It really is kind of where the season starts. And I think that now we've, you know, it's too early to kind of say these things, really, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's kind of up to Sellers to get them working and to get a consistent team that he wants out on the field. You know, we might make some more signings, but it's unlikely given that, you know, most of the ones that were free signings we probably would have tried to go after anyway. So we'll see how that plays out. We've got a very, very small mailbag, so we'll head into that now. And then we're going to talk about the owner, basically. We haven't had a good chance to do that. So we'll do the mailbag first, and then we will loop back round to Dai Young.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, okay. These are both from Nathan Oakes. And he says, quick one on the away form, which is terrible. Not the question, but the away form. Maybe looking into this too deeply, but would you agree that with the poor away form, it's hard for the players to transition to League One grounds in regards to conditions and atmosphere with the crowd right on top of you? Cambridge, Exeter, Vale are the away league games already this season. And with that basis, as much as it was a cup game, Millwall and the Den being more a modern feel and what the players are accustomed with and winning. Last season was a different team and a different manager. Okay, Ryan, away form, why is it going so badly? If you can even answer that.
So, kind of building on his point about it going bad at Exeter and Cambridge and all this, I think it's a weird thing for a Reading fan to say what I'm about to say, but we're very much sort of the coup in this division. It's our first time being in the division, what, 20 years? when we go to teams like Exeter and Cambridge, and I hate to say this because I know we're not a big club ourselves, but we are the bigger club in the situation. And naturally, it kind of, we've heard it all the time in football, it kind of builds this sort of cup atmosphere of like, they're wanting to come and see, challenge us and take the challenge to us. And that's where the players could be finding it more difficult. And the players that we've seen play, obviously, bar the Port Vale game, which I don't necessarily count, it's a very young group, what, 22 in average age, and they're going to these places like Cambridge and Exeter that they're slowly getting used to, that they may have seen them when they've been out on loan spells, if they've even been out on loan spells, but they're just slowly adapting to sort of the men's game. I am kind of making excuses because our away form has been poor. It has been really poor leading back from last season, but I do have a little bit of faith that once there's kind of this acceptance of, okay, right, we know what we're doing, they're a young group, as soon as they're like, okay, this is just football, and like, it's all settled down, and it's not us going, when we go to places, like say if we were away to Bolton this weekend, there's going to be a bit more of a natural feeling than going to the sort of smallerish grounds. And as I said, I hate saying that as a running fan because we aren't the biggest club ourselves, but it's just the way things are, I guess, in the division.
I think if you look at the games that we've actually played this season away too, I think it's a really important point to say it's a new team and a new manager. Like, there's hardly any actual like crossover from last season that's actually still in the starting 11. And the games that we've lost, right? So Port Vale away, I think we all agree that was kind of like, we've talked about rebuilds a bunch, and that was like the end of the era. Like, he gave the old guard two games to say, can you do it in League One? The old guard firmly said, no, we can't. And then they mucked off to Amiens. So after that, at the Exeter game, which was the first away game in a full stadium that a lot of those players, like those young players, A, may have played in a very hostile environment, and B, played together in that sort of setup. And then you've got the Cambridge game, which we talked about. It was a game of really fine margins. Like, we could have easily won that game 2-1 if the goal mouth scramble goes in and if the goal from Nibs goes in right at the end. So three games in isolation. It's frustrating if you're the person traveling around the country still and watching every single game, as we talked about last week. But these three particular games in isolation are not necessarily the same, especially after the Port Vale game. They're not the same thing as what we saw last season to me. Port Vale, yeah, kind of a continuation. But Cambridge and Exeter, not so much for me.
I think there's been spells as well in all three of those games that we have lost away from home. There has been spells where you look at Reading and you go, all right, okay, let's build on this. Like, we're playing well. The first, even the Port Vale game to a certain extent, before Andy Carroll missed the penalty, I thought we were half decent. We were looking good. And then obviously Carroll misses the penalty and it kind of all falls apart from there. The Exeter game, we had spells as well. Cambridge, as you mentioned, with the goal mouth scramble and the Nibs thing at the end. But there were chances. There were moments where you're like, okay, Reading are playing well here. Like, we've got a chance. We can nip one. We could win this 1-0. As you said, very fine margins, and we can certainly take the positives. And I think as much as it's hard when you look at the result and you feel like a lot of Reading fans are looking, oh, we're losing to Cambridge, oh, we're losing to Exeter, it doesn't matter. As we've said, this is the first block of games where it's like, this is the pre-season, this is how we build. And if those poor results are still coming across the next couple of months away from home, and there isn't much progress, and I think the longer we wait for the away win, obviously there'll be more pressure, but it will come. I don't have any doubt it will come at some stage. I've got faith in Sellers.
I think the problem, as we said last week, historically, is that this has been going on for a while, and you know, as Nathan points out, different team, different manager, but it's almost become a bit of a, you know, kind of a noose around the neck in terms of actually trying to get over this. So, you know, we look into the next home game and just the away game rather, and just hoping that we can get something out of that and, you know, bare minimum not lose it. So, yeah, we'll see after this international break. Thanks for that, Nathan. It's very, very difficult to kind of to quantify and put anything on it, but it would be interesting to kind of know what the players feel about the away form in terms of how they feel going into them and stuff like that, because, you know, the away form has been improving over the last few seasons. It's not been brilliant, of course it hasn't, but, you know, we are in a situation where we need to be winning those home games to kind of stay in contention in this league, really. So hopefully that will continue to happen. We haven't talked a lot really about what's been going on behind the scenes, and you know what's been going on with, you know, the owner and the pressure groups and stuff like that really. And we had an email a couple of weeks ago sent to the Tylehurst then, which I kind of wanted to, you know, to give respect to and kind of talk about it a little bit really. So I'm going to read parts of it out. It's quite a long email, but I'm going to kind of paraphrase some of it. Basically, you know, this Reading fan has emailed into us, which we, you know, always appreciate, and kind of taking the time to really clearly map out their viewpoints. So I'm going to kind of read it out, and then we can have a little chat about it really. But they say, I don't disagree that he isn't, as in Dye, perfect, but the situation we're in is largely due to two things. One, trusting the wrong people to spend his money, and two, the Chinese government making it hard to get his money here. You could add a third with the, and I won't repeat the word, but poor communication. But for me, it's down to Pang and Bowen to do a better job of managing the fan base, and can possibly be put down to the cultural, don't make your boss look like a Muppet. So the first issue were placed at the door of Ron Gourlay and others who've taken Dye's checkbook and run amok, given oversized contracts to various players over the years. Dye is trusting in football people to make good decisions, and they've come a long way short. On the second point, we've seen the payments taking longer to come through for HMRC and wages, but they've been paid in full. Not saying these things aren't acceptable, but it's not like he isn't paying or trying to. What is the reality if he goes? We need a lot of money regularly to stay in business. We may be able to find a unicorn investor or get ethnically questionable Saudi money, but the biggest likelihood is someone who either wants to make money off us, who needs their head read, or doesn't have the money and wants to put their owner on LinkedIn. Both of those options feel worse than what Dye offers us. I mean, it's difficult to disagree with those points in isolation. You know, there's nothing that, you know, this person said that you go, actually, you know, you're well out of order. Like, that's completely off the mark. I come at it from a slightly different angle, because obviously I do talk to people at the club about a variety of different things, not really the football side of it. I don't really kind of get involved in that, but certainly kind of off the pitch and the way the club runs and stuff, I have a little bit of an understanding of what goes on there. What I do know is that he, as in Dye, has not taken a single penny from the football club at all. And, you know, in the early stages of kind of protesting and last season, and when people were kind of starting to reach a point where they'd had enough, which, you know, is their opinion, there was a lot of comparison with the guys up at Blackpool, where they were actively taking money out. You know, there's been comparisons this season with Southend, where their owner is actively stopping any form of money flowing through the club and just not funding it at all. Those things can't, you know, and I don't want people going, well, he's defending Dye, because I'm not. I'm going to get splinters for this. I'm kind of just looking at all the possible viewpoints. But, you know, Dye is not trying to ruin the club, despite what other people think. That is just my opinion, and people disagree with it, and that's fine. But I don't think he's out to go, do you know what, I'm going to destroy Reading Football Club, in the same way that maybe other owners have. Ross, I'm gonna come to you first on this one, not just on the points that we've got from this email, but just generally where you're at and what your kind of overall vibe is with Reading Football Club off the field at the moment.
Just gonna say, let me jump in so I can make sure that you don't end up with the entirety of the media storm after this directed right at your head. But let's run through quickly the situation things that they're putting in, because I think a couple of them are linked, and I want to talk about that. I'm actually gonna pick out two first, where it says the Chinese government making it hard to get his money here. Yeah, that does seem to be an issue. We talked about that previously on the podcast. The Chinese Communist Party are making it very hard for Chinese money to be moved out of the country at the moment into things that they don't consider you know, sound investments, and to be fair, throwing a bunch of money at Reading Football Club as they slide down the leagues isn't the most sound investment we've ever heard of. But the other two things are linked, right? Trusting the wrong people to spend his money, and then talking about the communication. I just really, really, truly feel that communication is like one of the primary and most important things. And if you've got all of that money, right, you can't spend it on football, because you know you'll get dinged for financial fair play reasons or whatever. You should be spending it on a communications department that can actually go, I would say, not just like not do their job, because I'm not saying that people within the communications department right now aren't doing their job, but when consistently for years now the complaint has been there is not enough communication, the very obvious thing to do to me would be to hire a communication team that is going to go above and beyond, really, like, or give the communication team that's currently there funding to go out and actually make a difference there, right? There are more elements to running a football club than just the putting a team on the field, right? It's an entire, it's a community asset, it's a brand, it's all of these things. And I just think that the brand side of Reading has been neglected for a while, and they really need to like start focusing on that communication again. So I agree that you need to spend your money in the right way. And I think that with Mark Bowen, we are now getting towards that track. I think that he does still make mistakes, but I think that we're at least, you can at least see where his mind's at. But in terms of the rest of the club, a lot to do still. And I would advise putting money into commercial and communication departments for sure.
I mean, I just to add, I agree with you completely. Like, I know I've always said, whether it's Dyer, whether it's Medeski, whoever it is, you know, if you don't want to talk to the fans, don't own a football club, because, you know, historically football clubs are run by the community. They're the middle of the community. You've got to communicate. And whether that's through, like you said, like the commercial department, media department, whoever, you need to give them something to communicate, you know, the stakeholders in the club, which ultimately are the fans. I'm not going to go down the road of, well, we pay the wages and all this sort of stuff, because that's not true of clubs anymore. Like, the commercial revenue statistically outweighs what, you know, I'm paying for a season ticket in the Eamon Dolan stand. So that argument is flawed in itself. It's like when actors go, well, I just can't go out for coffee without people mobbing me. Don't be an actor then. Like, it's part of the job. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to front up to this, really. And my frustration really over the years has been with the communication and the lack of kind of community feel, really. Ryan, what are your what's your vibe on it at the moment? Where are you at with all this stuff?
Obviously, it's never a good situation to be in when we're having to wait for local journos to confirm, obviously, to do with whether people have been paid on time and things like that towards the end of the month. But kind of building off this email, I'm growing frustrated with the situation we find ourselves in. And as much as Dai has been generous, as you said, he apparently hasn't taken a penny, and he has invested large sums of money, correctly or incorrectly, in a football club. And he's not a football man. I think he's admitted that himself, or if he's even done an interview, I'm not sure. But I feel like the point of the Chinese government are making it hard to get his money here should be enough of a point to go, okay, maybe he shouldn't be a football owner then, because that is probably the most key point. If you can't get your money out of where your source money is, you should not be in charge of a football club. And there needs to be something in play to help us with the situation. In terms of trusting the wrong people to spend his money, yes, we haven't had the best people in charge. Ron Gourlay was, that period was a shambles. The contracts given out were mega to certain players. But then at the same time, Dyer's kind of had his own downfall. I'm not sure if you guys have listened to the Liam Ball podcast recently, the Baldur's Mindset podcast. Liam was speaking on there about how the owner himself blocked, I think it was a £10 million move to Brighton, potentially rising to £15 million. It was the owner that blocked that himself. And I think we've heard with Danny Loader as well that he blocked a £7 million move for him. Now, to me, that kind of strikes me as, he probably doesn't have a lack of knowledge, but we really need to be accepting those. We need to be recognising that Danny Loader came through the academy, Liam Moore came through for, I think it was around £1 million. Football clubs that we've seen with Brighton and Brentford, they sell their assets for profit, and then they can then use that to reinvest in other ways. And yeah, we may not have had the recruitment direction before, the people, probably the right people in Dai's ear advising him to accept those offers. But again, it kind of strikes me as he's kind of his own downfall here, because where would that £17 million stand us in terms of FFP? Would that have stopped the 6-point deduction from happening? Would that have, there's so many little things that you can pick out just from those two transfers alone that you're like, oh, okay, right, maybe he isn't the best. I think definitely we need to look for new investors, whether that, I think he's reluctant from what I'm getting, reluctant to sell the whole thing. but we need to find a process where we can get some form of investment in, because it's worrying living month to month on this idea of, okay, are all the staff being paid? Are the players going to be paid correctly? And obviously, we're still there's still potentially, I think it's 3 more points that could be deducted if we haven't paid this 125%. There's still obviously that looming over us. And as a football club, me personally, I would rather him sort of give it up. I'd rather him, we'd move on to someone new, because it's been nothing short of a shambles. But again, I don't know how much of that is just down to the fact he's had the wrong people in charge. And it's obviously worrying as well that 2 out of his 3 clubs have gone bust now. But I mean, we'll see what happens. But I'm leaning towards, I think we need someone new.
Well, I mean, you know, again, it's all a game of opinions. That's a cliche, but it's, you know, there are a lot of, say, opposing opinions, but you know, there are a lot of Reading fans out there that have differing views, perhaps. And it's not a comfortable position to be in, as you say, Ryan, when we're worrying about paying staff and we're hearing all these rumours and stuff. And I think for me, ultimately, it comes down to communication. And I also kind of question sometimes the interest that he has now left in it, in terms of the fact we've dropped down the league and, you know, potentially not a, well, if it ever was a money-making exercise, I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's really down to those kind of communication elements, really. We're gonna move on to Bolton preview very, very briefly. So we'll go through that now and just kind of see what we're up against versus the Trotters, which is a great nickname, on Saturday the 16th.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Alrighty, after a two-week break, just about two-week break, maybe just under two-week break, we have the Trotters, which I think is hilarious. I just think it's really funny.
Great name.
Yeah, they're up at the Select Carlisle on Saturday, 16th September at 3 p.m. As always, tickets available for all the usual channels. If you feel that you need to get down there and support a team, which, you know, we should run buzzing. I can't wait for this game. I really can't. Yeah. Great to kind of see the lads back in action and hopefully pick up 3 points, which, of course, will be very difficult because we are playing a team in form. They are second in the league, played 6, got 13 points, 1-4, drawn 1, lost 1, including that incredibly heavy defeat to, I guess they are rivals, really, Wigan at home. They lost 4-0 earlier on in the season, which was an absolute shocker for them. Got some good players in form as well. You've got Dion Charles. You've got Victor, I can never say this, Adebayo. I mean, you know, they are looking really good at the moment. And I know that when I spoke to the Bolton fan on a derby podcast of all things at the start of the season, very, very confident indeed. I think he actually ended up with a few pelters from some of the derby fans. You know, it's like, you're not Real Madrid, you're not Barcelona, all this sort of stuff. But they have started well. They've kind of put their money where their mouth is, quite literally, in terms of where they're at. Ryan, how do you see this going, this game?
It's going to be a struggle. And if you're a believer in underlying numbers and your XGs and the XGAs of the world and everything, I did a bit of digging with the Bolton-Wigan game because I thought, oh, this would be interesting. Sort of, Bolton is supposed to be one of the favourites. And obviously getting smacked 4-0 by your rivals is never good. If you looked at it, Bolton actually won about, I think it was around, excuse the decimal points, but it was about 2-1. Bolton won 2-1 on XG, but lost 4-0. So again, if you're a believer, they probably could have and should have got something out of the game. And overall, their stats this season in terms of XG, they've got the highest in League One with 8. And the fourth lowest expected goals against with about 3.6. So it's going to be difficult. It's they're, as you said, they finished 5th last season. They won the Papa John's Trophy last season. I'm expecting a difficult game. We're welcoming John Daddy Bedvarsson back as well, which would be nice. I know fans have differing opinions of him, but I personally didn't mind him myself. But I'm hopeful. I'm confident. I'm hoping Sellers has had about 2 weeks on the training ground now. Hopefully, Lewis Wing I saw was back in training. Sam Smith was back in training. I saw on his Instagram story before we started recording.
Nice.
So I don't know if they'll be back ready for the game, but hopefully they'll have some involvement. We'll have a couple more players back. Am I going to say that we could win the game. I'm going to lean against it, but I'm hopeful that we can surprise a few and hopefully get a result there.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I mean, I think with Bolton, they've got some very good players amongst their ranks. You know, you've got Josh Sheehan, who I obviously really like. He's just come back into the Wales fold, actually. You know, the two guys up front that we mentioned. So there's a lot of good players within their team. Ross, have we got enough to beat them, do you think?
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this, right? Like, we have a squad that's enough to compete at the top end of the table this season. I don't think that they will make it into the playoffs, as we talked about a few times. I think this is a season where we finish, you know, in the top half. Hopefully, I've said 10th a few times. I just think that this slow start is kind of what's going to get us there. And maybe the slow start continues, right? But I don't know. Like we talked about last week, which I'm starting to sound like a broken record with saying that, but you know, like I just feel that if it's a, it might be a bridge too soon this early on in the season for it to go up to Bolton and beat them. But I don't know. I just think that we've got enough to compete. I don't think that we'll get blown out for sure. So yeah, I'm confident that we can come back with a point at least. And I think that given the extra time to work on things on the training ground, given the players coming back, like Ryan's saying, yeah, it should at least be a competitive one.
I mean, I think Bolton, of all places, is coming out with probably the most exotic names that they can have with the football players they've got. Josh Dacre Cogley, he's done quite well for them this season. Paris Mahogma, which I think is a great name. Yeah, so look, I mean, look, they're in form. They've got the players, they've got the names behind the players, and ultimately it's kind of down to us to be able to do something with that. I think given the kind of form that we've had that's been sort of fairly indifferent, as I said, would be really good to kind of get 3 points against a team that's really in form. And, you know, as you guys said, you know, Sellers has had sort of nearly 2 weeks to be able to try and mould something here. And, you know, as you said, Ryan, get players back. Hopefully, you know, we'll see what most Reading fans would agree would be the strongest 11 out of the squad that we've got currently, you know, starting on Saturday. So, yeah, look, I'm looking forward to it. And I think that's the difference with this season. I'm not walking into every game with dread. Like, there is a brand of football that is trying to be played. Of course, it hasn't come off, you know, and we're not seeing that consistently. But there are signs that we could, you know, could surprise a few teams, and there's no reason why it can't be this Saturday. So we'll see.
Yeah, and think about just last thing I'll say: the momentum. If we win this game, will be immediately huge. You take those players, you give them the confidence of going to an almost 30,000 seater stadium and winning. Yeah, that would be huge for the season.
This is a real game where we can make a statement. If we can get a result and we look convincing, then it will give us a lot of confidence going forward, to the point where I know Reading fans can be reactionary sometimes. But I think you'll see, if we do somehow get a result, you'll see a lot of very hefty predictions towards the playoffs. But keeping my feet on the ground, if we do get a result, it's going to show that it is working. And that, as we spoke about previously in the pod, about the away form, that all these pieces are slowly coming together. And a result at home against Bolton will, especially if it's a convincing one, will show the rest of the division, okay, they might have started a bit poorly, but Reading are here now. They're going to be a team. Yes, we might not challenge the playoffs. Yeah, that might be a step too far, but it can cement us as a half-decent side going forward, which, let's hope for the best and hope we can get something on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Either way, we'll be back on Monday. Whatever next Monday is, to talk about the Bolton game. So yeah, we'll be back then. We've got a few kind of key guests coming up. We've got Harvey, as we said, who's running the Farnborough and Reading FC Legends game, which will be interesting. And Robbie Savage has agreed to come on as well. So we got him at the end of the month, which will be very exciting. I'd like to say he's a big fan of the site. I hope he is. He kind of retweets stuff, and he's given us a few messages and said, I like this, I like that. So yeah, we'll have him on sort of later on in the month and talk about all things Reading FC. Ross, thank you very much for your time today, sir, as always.
Yeah, thank you kindly. Thank you to Ryan as well. Oh, sorry. Back to work. Yeah, exactly. Straight back to work. So if this doesn't come out, you know, at the normal time, just assume that it got busy.
Yeah, exactly. And Ryan, how did you find your debut? Happy with it?
Hopefully slightly better than Clinton Mullers, bless him. No, so nice. It's a bit harsh. Yeah. I very much enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me. been great talking about Reading, and yeah, hopefully it was a good debut, and hopefully going forward team selection may look in my favor.
Well, if it was anywhere else other than Ross, it would definitely be a 7 or 8, I think.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Thank you guys.
Thanks so much for listening with us. Hope you have a good week. We'll see you back at the Select Coalition on Saturday, and then we'll be back, as I said, on Monday to talk about the game. And hopefully we'll be discussing 3 points for the Royals. Come on, you Arse.